If you give a climate denier 4 more years in the White House, if you give a climate arsonist 4 more years in the White House, why would anyone be surprised if we have more America ablaze?
I know I won't be.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. Mm-hmm. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. In Grand Rapids on WPRR, down in New Orleans, staring down the barrel of yet another hurricane on WHIV. Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin on WADR, in Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF, and yes, we stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Deprogrammed Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman. Not that it needs a blanket. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the world-famous Bradcast. All right, on Friday's Bradcast, we went through a mountain of legal cases now playing out around the country concerning this year's elections, as Republicans in state after state after state are dead set on making voting as difficult as possible for as many people as they possibly can, yes, even during a global pandemic. Among the stories that we covered with election attorney Courtney Hostetler of FreeSpeechForPeople.org on Friday, a federal appeals court in Florida recently flipped to a GOP majority thanks to 5 new federal judges appointed to it by Donald Trump. Well, that court decided that a pay-to-vote law, a poll tax, as it was described by the lower federal court judge, was just fine for the 1.5 million former felons that the GOP legislature has now said must pay off all fines and fees before they are allowed to vote in this November's election. A federal court has said that is just fine. In Wisconsin, the state GOP majority Supreme Court there is causing havoc by ordering municipalities to stop right now, stop sending out absentee ballots, even though about 380,000 have already gone out, until the court decides if all ballots will need to be completely reprinted from scratch to add the Green Party presidential ticket to them, even though the state election officials found that the Green Party should not be on the ballot according to law, and the officials have made clear that there will be no time to do so, to reprint all the ballots and get them out and still meet state and federal deadlines for mailing out ballots in about 1 week. Actually, less than that at this point. State deadline, they got to go out September 17. Federal deadline says September 19. For some slightly better news, on Friday, a federal court in Texas ordered state election officials to notify voters when a perceived signature mismatch occurs on their absentee ballots there, and to allow a meaningful opportunity for those voters in Texas to come in and correct any perceived problems. That's good. That was about all of the good news we were able to scrape up on Friday. At the same time in Texas, the postmaster in Houston has disallowed the nonpartisan League of Women Voters from leaving multilingual voter registration applications in a number of post offices in the nation's fourth largest city. And a federal court in Texas denied a motion for preliminary injunction to force Texas polling places to do things like, you know, require masks and social distancing to make it safer to vote, since Texas also has one of the most restrictive absentee ballot laws in the country. Oh, yeah, and the same court said no to hand-marked paper ballots for those who would prefer not to use germ-infected, unverifiable touchscreen voting systems in the state. A state court in Pennsylvania denied a similar motion, and an appeal has been filed with the state Supreme Court in North Carolina, where a lower court rejected a motion to block the state's new touchscreen voting systems, unverifiable touchscreen voting systems, you know, just like the ones we use here in Los Angeles now. But that happens to be in one of the most swingiest of swing states in the nation, North Carolina. The appeal alleges imminent risk to voters' rights to free elections and equal protection under the laws if they are required to vote on the new, insecure, unverifiable touchscreen ballot marking devices this November in that key battleground state. So, yeah, not a lot of good legal news in that regard on Friday. You can download the show for free at bradblog.com. There are still more cases working their way through the courts that we will be covering on this show in the coming days, probably tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. But later on today, we'll be joined by attorney and Twitter election integrity advocate Jenny Cohen to talk about some of her greatest concerns about this year's presidential election, where voting, by the way, is now underway already in some places, including by absentee in North Carolina, with the election just 50 days away. And we'll talk to Jenny about some tips that she has to maximize the odds of your vote being counted, cast and counted as hoped. And if we have time, I'd love to open up the phones to your calls with questions for Jenny and or me about voting this year at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK, as we are live today in our smoky North Hollywood studio here. So line up now if you like. But first, everything, and I mean everything, is all going on at the same time. So let's begin here. Donald Trump offered a glaring new example of his refusal to put medical science before politics with a large indoor rally on Sunday night in Nevada. It made a mockery of social distancing, while the pandemic he so tragically mismanaged has now claimed more than 194,000 American lives. It was yet another example of him failing to mind even the warnings about COVID that he himself, we now know, gave in recorded interviews to journalist Bob Woodward as early as February of this year, when he warned that the virus is incredibly lethal, that it is passed through the air. But now he's got an election to win, so apparently he does not care how many of his own supporters he may get sick and or kill at his own rallies as they gather shoulder to shoulder without masks.
And of course, he does require them to sign forms that make him completely immune from liability if they do get sick at his rallies.
Of course.
Of course.
It's never his fault, is it? Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
The event in Nevada, his second rally in the state in as many days, did not only risk the health of those present, thousands of whom were packed together inside a manufacturing facility in defiance of the state's ban on local gatherings of 50 people or more. It also had the potential to turn into a super spreader event that could see COVID-19 outbreaks in the wider community in the area. But Trump hadn't held an indoor rally in nearly 3 months. His last one was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you probably remember, after which the city saw a surge in cases and multiple campaign staffers and Secret Service agents tested positive for the virus. The indoor rally on Sunday came after two airport hangar facilities at airports had to sort of renege on their agreement with the campaign to use their hangars for the rallies after the state of Nevada notified them that they were out of compliance with the state COVID-19 requirements. Trump later claimed in an interview with the Las Vegas Review-Journal that he didn't think it was subject, that he didn't think he was subject to the statewide 50-person gathering cap because, you know, the so-called law and order president does not apparently believe the law actually applies to him. And Trump attacked Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak, a Democrat, for making it, quote, impossible to hold an outdoor to hold an indoor rally. He said, I'd argue that it was, I would argue that it was Trump who made it impossible himself because he so disastrously and criminally bungled the effort to contain the virus since it first appeared here and has been making it worse and even more deadly with his maskless rallies, among other things, ever since. If anyone, if he wants to look at somebody to blame, blame yourself, Mr. President. You screwed this up. And it was deadly. For his part, Governor Steve Sisolak blasted Trump on Sunday night for flouting the state's restrictions on large gatherings. In a statement posted to Twitter, Sisolak accused Trump of, quote, taking reckless and selfish actions that are putting countless lives in danger. With his event in Henderson on Sunday, it violated Nevada's restrictions on gatherings of more than 50 people. As usual, the governor tweeted, he doesn't believe the rules apply to him. He described the rally as an insult to every Nevadan who has followed the directives, made sacrifices, and put their neighbors before themselves. The governor wrote that at a time when Nevada is focused on getting our economy back on track and protecting public health, the president's actions this weekend are shameful, dangerous, and irresponsible. The same ditching of inconvenient facts to service Trump's personal whims and his political goals and his conspiracy theories will be on display, were on display, I should say, here in California on Monday. The president is visiting one of the raging western wildfires out here in California, where more than 3 million acres in this state alone have burned this year. And at least 22 people have died since mid-August. The president insists that the fires are caused by poor forest management because California and I guess Oregon and Washington State don't rake and sweep dead leaves enough off the forest floor. Seriously, that is his depth of knowledge on this matter. In response, notes CNN, scientists argue that they have been exacerbated by climate change, the situation here, the conditions here. That's how CNN reports it. They don't tell us who is right. Is it Donald Trump that we need to sweep the leaves off the floor, or is it the scientists, the hundreds of thousands of scientists who do this for a living? Or is it the president who says the record fires now up and down the entire West Coast are due to a lack of leaf raking? Who knows? Don't know. CNN doesn't make that clear. But hey, at least they mention the word climate change in the article, so that's something. Someone who does know, of course, the answer to that question is our own Desi Doyen, our producer here. She's also the co-host and managing editor of our Green News Report. So, Desi Doyen, what is the latest now on the fires and the new hurricane barreling, I guess, towards Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama at this hour?
Yep.
And by the way, I think there's another hurricane behind that I just heard on the way over.
Oh, yeah. There are five now. Five hurricanes developing in the Atlantic Basin. And that's I think, only happened once before since record keeping began in the 1850s.
And by the way, this comes after just, 2 weeks ago, we had two hurricanes in 1 week slam into the Gulf Coast during the Republican National Convention.
Yes, exactly. So first, let's cover the hurricane. So Hurricane Sally is now the earliest S-named storm in recorded history in this really historic 2020 Atlantic hurricane season. So we already blew past hurricanes P and R. That was Paulette and Renee, which are out there in the Atlantic spinning and aren't expected to make landfall in the United States. Tropical storm Teddy is already forming and already named. It'll be a hurricane probably by the end of this week. And Vicky has already formed, and that should also be turning into a hurricane pretty soon. Hurricane Sally, landfall is forecast to be sometime on Tuesday. It threatens the Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama coast. Right now, I don't know what the exact trajectory of the path is for Hurricane Sally, but the National Hurricane Center says that Sally is very slow moving and brings intense rainfall. Could be as much as 2 feet in some isolated areas.
Slow moving is bad because it parks the storm over wherever it hits and dumps just unspeakable amounts of rain.
Remember Hurricane Harvey that parked over Houston and caused enormous flooding there.
Yep.
So they warn, National Hurricane Center warns that life-threatening storm surge could be as high as 11 feet. And that, of course, is something that Louisiana is seriously trying to grapple with because there are still tens of thousands of people who are without electricity after Hurricane Laura amid a heat wave and a pandemic. So they're trying to find enough places to evacuate people to and have shelters for them. They're in fact putting more people in these states in hotels because shelters are full and they cannot, you know, put them into group shelters. So they're innovating new places and new ways to put people into out of harm's way.
Incredibly enough, however, these storms are sort of secondary to these fires.
Exactly. And so the death toll from the wildfires across the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, and California, has risen to at least 35. And the National Weather Service has again issued red flag warnings amid high winds and dry conditions in both Oregon and some Northern California counties. The August Complex fire in Northern California is now by far the largest wildfire in California history. It is now more than 700,000 acres. That's more than 1,000 square miles in this one fire. It has burned 50% of the Mendocino National Forest. Donald Trump visited California on Monday, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to view the devastation from the fires, and again, he tried to blame the western states for their own fires. He's still referencing that conversation that he misunderstood with the president of Finland 2 years ago.
King, I think. Wasn't it the king?
No, I think he's the president of Finland.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, that's the unnamed official that he keeps
Keeps blaming California for not raking the leaves off their forest, but he doesn't note that 60% of the forests actually out west, at least in California, are actually federal forests?
Yes, in California, 60%.
So that's his job to rake the leaves.
Exactly, and there has not been enough funding to the Forest Service to do the kind of forest management that forest scientists would be required, and no, forest scientists say you do not need to rake the forests. It's not the problem with the leaves. It's the problem with a century of fire suppression policy that has been promulgated by the Forest Service and copied in the states as well. And Governor Newsom has implemented a very deep and comprehensive strategy, but that's a both medium and long-term strategy, but it requires time and it requires funding. So on Friday, Governor Newsom rebuked climate science deniers and said, listen, this is climate change and we need to address this and pay attention to it. And forest management is just one component of it. Climate change causing these mega heat waves and these mega forest fires is the driver of these mega forest fires. So on Monday, in that briefing with President Trump,
yeah,
Governor Newsom thanked Trump for the emergency disaster declaration and funding. And he even told Trump that, hey, 2/3 of California's forests are managed by the federal government. And Trump ignored him and just kept going on and repeating the same stupid misunderstanding of forest science.
Of course.
And then a state fire official tried to engage him on solutions to the fire crisis, and Trump just straight out denied that climate change even exists. Federico, let's do number two.
And priority is vegetation management, but I think we want to work with you to really recognize the changing climate and what it means to our forests and actually work together with that science. That science is going to be key, because if we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Oh,
that was
Jesus.
Trump's response. Yes.
It'll start getting cooler. Oh, science doesn't agree with you. Oh, science doesn't know. So it's going to, climate change is just going to go away. You watch, someday it's going to just disappear. Right. Just like the COVID crisis, it's going to just go away.
Right.
Yeah, because science doesn't know.
Now, I should say also that Democratic presidential nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, also had remarks on the California fires on Monday. He called Trump a climate arsonist for making climate change worse and in rolling back U.S. climate policies and pollution standards that protected public health. And Biden also reiterated his pledge to invest $2 trillion in climate solutions and rebuild for resiliency against all these coming climate impacts and the ones that we're seeing today.
Last week, and this was last week before the fires even got larger and larger, but Nick Nosler, a predictive services meteorologist with the National Interagency Fire Center in Boise, Idaho, said that this event is unprecedented due to the number of large, fast-moving wildfires over such a broad region. He says it sets it apart from all other fires in modern times, that multiple fires made 20-plus mile runs in 24 hours over the past few days last week in California, Oregon, and Washington. And most of the fires are making massive runs in timber and burning tens of thousands of acres and, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of plus acres in one single day. The sheer amount of fire, he said, on the landscape is surreal. And no one I have talked to can remember anything like it. But don't worry, it'll cool down. It'll all just go away. And yet, while Donald Trump, of course, is pretending that climate change will just miraculously go away, just like he told you the coronavirus would before it ended up killing almost 200,000 Americans, with double that number, by the way, most likely set to die in this country before the end of this year. What's the media's excuse for failing to link our climate crisis to what we are now seeing? Because they are doing a terrible job of it. Perhaps on tomorrow's show, I'll get into some of the details where they are failing, both at the network level and on the cable news level. Just doing a terrible job of informing the nation about what we need to know, especially as we are, 50 days out from an election. But this failure by our corporate media, it's just one of the reasons, a very big one, but it's one of the reasons that a climate denier like Donald Trump could ever become president of the United States in the first place. Failure after failure after failure by the media to educate the electorate. It's pretty simple. Educate the electorate on what they need to know before it comes to an election. On that score, let's take a quick break. We will be joined by a friend of mine who has been working her rear end off over these past 4 years to do exactly that, to help voters understand what they need to know and what they can try and do about it before our next election, which is underway right now. Twitter superstar and election integrity advocate and hero Jenny Cohn joins us next on the broadcast. Buckle up and feel free to give us a call if you have any questions about casting your vote this year and how best to maximize the odds of it being counted as cast. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you, Desi Doyen. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is your broadcast. I hope they wake up. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. Attorney and election integrity activist Jenny Cohn has been on a tear of late regarding cellular modems, which have been installed in precinct ballot scanners in key swing states like Florida and Michigan and Wisconsin. We reported a number of times on this over the past year or so, particularly after it was discovered by researchers and reported by election integrity reporter Kim Zetter, who was on the show to talk about it at the time, that some of these states actually had no idea that not only were modems installed in their voting and tabulation systems, But some of them had modems, or at least their back-end central tabulation systems were actually connected to the internet all year round, even when elections weren't going on. And many of the election officials had no idea that their private voting system vendor had actually installed their systems that way. Jenny Cohn on the Twitters released this new video over the weekend to raise awareness of this concern and to push for her hashtag Remove the Modems campaign.
In 2016, people in positions of trust told us it would be almost impossible for hackers to change the outcome of a national election because voting machines supposedly never connect to the internet.
Those things are not connected to the internet. I know of no jurisdiction where voting machines are connected to the internet. This makes it nearly impossible for a remote hacker.
Voting machines are not connected to the internet.
Those are not connected. Voting machines themselves are not connected to the internet.
They were wrong. Election security experts say that virtually all electronic vote tallies can be hacked through the internet, even if the voting machines themselves don't connect to the internet.
Election management system workstations sometimes are connected to the internet, or the data that's programmed into them passes through an internet-connected system.
Moreover, many precinct ballot scanners include wireless modems that connect the scanners and the county central tabulators to the internet. The states of Wisconsin, Florida, Michigan, Illinois, and Rhode Island include these wireless modems. In February, the GOP blocked three election security bills, including one that would have banned these wireless modems. We, the voters, are democracy's last line of defense. We must demand that election officials in battleground states and beyond remove the modems before November. Before it's too late.
That new video from released by Jenny Cohn of ProtectOurVotes.com cites We the Voters as democracy's last line of defense. And I couldn't agree more, especially right now. There are a lot of folks out there who believe that Democratic attorneys will be there to fight this fight for us somehow. We've seen, however, in election after election, that they will not be. For example, after the 2016 election, when we had perhaps the greatest surprise ending to a presidential election in our nation's history, when Trump appeared to have barely won in three key states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, that had not gone to the Republican presidential candidate in decades, when just an average of two votes cast for Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump, or even recorded for Hillary Clinton instead of recorded for Donald Trump in each precinct in those three states, that would have resulted in Hillary Clinton becoming the next president. And yet, the Clinton campaign and the hundreds of Democratic attorneys they promised would be on the ground, which Democrats always promise to have, and they're doing it again for this year's election. Those attorneys, well, they failed to demand a hand count of the ballots in any of those three states back in 2016. We still don't know if Donald Trump actually won the 2016 election. That year, it fell to the Green Party's Jill Stein to seek a hand count, and her legal team was rejected in various ways in all three states. In Michigan, for example, it was determined that Stein did not have the standing to seek a hand count because she could not have won the race, no matter how it came out. So why didn't Hillary contest? Well, I don't know. I think she may regret it now. But in any event, we're now hearing the same exact thing from Biden's team. According to the New York Times' Shane Goldmacher today, Joe Biden's campaign is establishing a major new legal operation, bringing in two former solicitors general and hundreds of lawyers in what the campaign billed as the largest election protection program in presidential campaign history. Feel better? Here to discuss that and her campaign to hashtag remove the modems and perhaps offer some actually helpful tips that voters need to know about right here, right now, this year is Jenny Cohn. She's an attorney, an election integrity advocate, and Twitter activist in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her articles on election security have been published by the New York Review of Books, Who, What, Why, Salon, TYT Investigates, and yes, even at bradblog.com. Oh, Jenny, welcome back to the Bradcast, Jenny.
Hi, Brad. My video sounded really good on the radio.
It's a good video on the radio or on the Twitters. So thank you for making it. Hey, I hope you're in one piece today, as everything is sort of coming down on us at once. Most importantly, though, at the moment, how are you holding up in the Smoky Bay area? Are you safely away from the fires right now?
Yeah, we're not in danger of the flames actually hitting us, but we had the really disconcerting orange sky like we saw in Australia, and we're definitely seeing in Oregon now. Mm-hmm. The air quality was really bad, but you know, in Oregon it's so bad that it was off the EPA chart. Like hazardous is 500 mm-hmm. something, and they were at 700, which is really terrifying. And
wow.
So where I am in Oakland, California, mm-hmm. it was not hazardous, but dangerous.
Well, don't be worried. Donald Trump is here in California on Monday. He said it's all going to cool down. It's all going to just go away like a miracle. So don't worry.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it's okay. Let's start with your campaign to hashtag remove the modems. Why is this such a concern to you right now, Jenny? And have you heard from any of the election officials in the states with modems installed in their voting systems that they have any intention of actually getting rid of them before Election Day, much less before early voting starts and, you know, any minute at this point?
No, I haven't heard from any of them. When I first started talking about this a few years ago, mm-hmm. so this was before the midterm elections, after I read Kim Zetter's piece mm-hmm. and a few others that were on point, I would tag election officials and the Wisconsin Election Board, whoever runs their Twitter account, actually would reply, but they, you know, they would say things like, oh, it's only going to be connected to the internet for a few seconds. And then I'd get an expert to reply, you know, to say, well, that's plenty of time, you know, especially for a nation state. But, mm-hmm. you know, people are waiting for those transmissions on election night, and mm-hmm. they'll just wait until you click it on, and then they can get in. And they didn't seem to care. So Bloomberg had done a story not that long ago with Michigan's Democratic Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, mm-hmm. where she said, this was in, I think, January or February, that she would look into possibly removing the modem. So she was aware of the concern. She was aware they connect to the internet. She was aware experts recommend against them, but she never got around to it, apparently. And I'm very concerned because her advisory board, the co-chairs, one is great, Alex Halderman, who mm-hmm. I have no doubt probably advised her to remove the modems.
Yep.
But the other one is our friend David Becker, who's featured in my Remove the Modems video, for providing testimony that, you know, was very misleading. I don't know if it was that it was intentionally misleading, but it misled nonetheless.
Can I break in here just to have a thought or two on David Becker, who I believe to be loathsome and irresponsible?
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, let me just say that he's regarded as an expert. He used to work for People for the American Way and some other groups, some otherwise, you know, good progressive groups, but he broke them before he was pushed out there. He wants every American in the country to vote on an electronic voting system. He's been pushing for that for years. He and some other, you know, so-called experts like him seem to suggest that your concerns, Jenny Cohen, about modems in the systems, that those are overblown. Now, Becker, as you noted, he was one of the voices we heard at the top of your video, testifying before Congress at the time. I believe that voting systems, I think that was from 2016, before 2016, that voting systems were never connected to the internet. Obviously, he is wrong. So what's up with that? What's up with him? What's up with his criticism of you for pointing out he's wrong?
He did say to his knowledge.
Oh, I see.
No voting machines that connect to the internet, and uh-huh. therefore it would be almost impossible to hack them remotely. And the thing about that testimony, and what I hope comes through in the video, is that even without the modems, his testimony was incredibly misleading because, as Alex Halderman has made really clear on a number of different videos that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
That all voting machines have to receive programming before every election from the centralized election management system, and in many cases, those centralized election management computers connect to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they don't, they receive input and updates and things from other systems that connect to the internet.
Yep.
So even if the voting machines themselves didn't connect, the notion that that would make it almost impossible to hack them remotely was a farce.
Yep.
To any actual expert. I'm actually not sure many people do call him an expert. Election security expert, anyway. I know he calls himself an election security expert. I haven't heard others call him that, except, you know, maybe the Georgia Secretary of State.
Yes, but, who he's now apparently working for, the Georgia Secretary of State. Yeah. So it gives you some idea.
I know. He is a paid consultant for the Georgia Secretary of State, which, to my knowledge, does not have these modems, by the way. They have other problems. But the other thing that was misleading about his testimony, and also, to be fair, it wasn't just him. It was James Comey and another woman who Becker used to work with, I'm told, and another woman and the head of someone on the EAC. Some of the voting machines in 2016 did connect to the Internet. Mm-hmm. And the truth is real election security experts suspected this all along. They knew about the modems and that they knew that the modems likely were connecting them to the Internet. Mm-hmm. And there is a story there, and has been no accountability as to why all of these people testified to Congress that they apparently didn't, either they didn't know that the modems connected to the Internet. Why didn't they know? Somebody had to tell them this. Where did they get this information, and why were they called to testify as experts on this issue when clearly they didn't know what they were talking about? There's been no accountability, and so that was part of what propelled me to make this video, because I'm very concerned that I see these same people getting asked onto forums, and Becker getting $50 million from Mark Zuckerberg to do supposedly election security. I'm just very worried that we're going to be gaslit again in 2020 if the electronic totals somehow favor Trump. We're all going to be told to pack our bags and go home. There's nothing to see here. He just won. He was a legitimate president, period, which is something that Susan Hennessy said in 2017, sort of in that same group, the sort of, mindset. And I was trying to call for transparency with this video so that we don't have everybody folding up and going home.
What people need to understand, and at the time when all of those clips, the machines are never connected to the Internet, of course, as you probably can imagine, Jenny, my head was exploding on this show. Oh, my God. And we were trying to point out every time these jackasses said that over and over, and it was a bunch of Democrats, by and large, who were saying that. These machines are never connected to the Internet. You can't hack a presidential election. Complete and utter nonsense. So when you say, Jenny, that, when the electronic results report one thing, that are people going to accept it, or are they going to say, no, we would like to see the evidence, the hand-marked paper ballots, where available, to determine who actually won and who lost? Do you get any sense that either the Democrats or just Americans at large at this point understand that much and will insist upon that this year?
No, I don't. I think Hillary Clinton understands it now, and I think that...
What makes you say that?
I've had a communication with her, and I do believe... I'm paraphrasing, so I do believe that she understands the importance of reviewing the hand-marked paper ballots at this point. And I think she understands the importance of the Democrats not boxing themselves into a corner where they will look like hypocrites if they need to file an election challenge based on the electronic totals or any other aspect of the election, actually.
Well,
so, importantly, does the public, I don't know how much power she has over the situation or influence even over the situation at this point. And so the bigger question, we may need the public to demand that they not fold everything up and go home. And I wasn't getting, my Twitter account is pretty big, but the message wasn't reaching enough people, and someone not that long ago, his name is Royce, and he's a friend of mine, and he suggested, I was on the Stuttering John podcast, and he said, if you embed videos, it goes a lot further on Twitter than just YouTube or tweets, and sure enough, he tried it for me a few times, and it would get like 30,000 views, whereas my most watched YouTube video ever was at 3,000, so that was what. And then there, the Midas Touch and Don Winslow make these incredible videos, and they get millions of views. And I thought, well, let me give it a try. So we don't have millions of views, but it did get almost 500,000 on version one, and I'm now on version three.
Okay.
So we'll see. It's you know, if it's getting to 500,000 people or so, that's pretty good.
It is pretty good. And, you know, a lot of this, as I've had to say over the years, a lot of this is about educating the electorate. It is not, there's no one particular silver bullet that is going to save us other than the electorate understanding that when Joe Biden says, oh, I concede, the voters can say, we don't care if you succeed, Mr. Vice President. This is not your election to concede. We would like to see the evidence. I know you recently put together a piece at Medium that I want to get to here on tips to mitigate threats to our votes and voter registrations before November. And I'll again, if we have time here, I'll invite folks in to ask questions to either Jenny and or myself at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I want to get to some of those tips, but very, very quickly, I mentioned the article from the New York Times today, Jenny, reporting that Biden and the Democrats plan to have a quote, unprecedented hundreds of lawyers available on the ground this year to protect the election. Does that give you any particular peace of mind this year?
It just raises questions for me. I'm not at all optimistic that that encompasses the electronic components of our election system. So, I mean, I'm glad, sure, that if they're going to be fighting for the absentee ballots and, you know, the signature match and all of that, because I have no doubt that what the Trump team wants to do is win the electronic total on Election Day and then try to run out the clock or do something else with the signature match so that we don't get all of them counted, mm-hmm. or that if it goes to a recount, it gets shut down prematurely. By mail, the totals are sent to that election management system too. Mm-hmm. So there's an electronic component there, and that's just what really concerns me is the blind spot that the Democratic Party seems to have for the electronic component of potential cheating.
What is your greatest concern about this year's elections? If you had to pick one, and I know that it's hard, and I'll say that mine is ransomware attacks, which we have seen on cities and counties and states over the past year that completely cripple the jurisdiction's computer networks until a ransom is paid in Bitcoin or something like that to the anonymous hacker or hackers. That would, of course, cripple any jurisdictions that relied on computers to vote or electronic poll books for voters to check in and vote, like here in Los Angeles, shamefully this year. What is your biggest concern this year as we head into November 3rd?
Well, I'm going to cheat because it's a three-headed tiger. And I've done a few posts where I did the three stooges, but I called it the three scourges of election security.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a triple threat. Electronic poll books are kind of a new thing. I mean, they've been around, but their use has spiked enormously since 2016. Remote access software, I'm not at all convinced it's all been removed by any means, especially from Diebold systems that are still in use. Diebold itself has been dissolved and under the umbrella of ES&S.
And that's the remote access software would be software that is on the voting, either the voting systems or the central tabulator system.
The county central tabulators.
That allows someone to easily access the system and change votes, yeah?
Yeah, that and then the modems as well. So those three things, I think. The electronic poll books and then BMDs also. Maybe I put remote access and modems as a combined scourge. Anyway, and then the ballot marking devices. So I'm very worried that we have sort of a new system that's being deployed, which involves often Wi-Fi or Bluetooth-connected electronic poll books that are being used to encode these activation cards, which then go into a new touchscreen voting machine called a ballot marking device, mm-hmm. and it could include the voter information. I don't know. We don't know what's on those cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you need that to work in order to activate these new touchscreen voting machines that I'm already worried about. And I'm very worried that that combination could enable, the internet connectivity goes out in targeted areas if there are rolling blackouts and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have to be obvious either, just connectivity problems like we saw all over LA County with this type of setup, e-poll books activating touchscreen voting machines. And the e-poll books had connectivity issues all over Los Angeles County.
Yep.
Could have, and the e-poll book vendors.
If only someone had warned about that before it actually okay, go ahead. Yeah, because we were.
The e-poll book vendors has sort of been this sleeper story. But, you know, they're pretty shady, too. And the number one e-poll book vendor is a former Republican election official whose product developer is a religious right guy that campaigned for the president of the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles that opposes the Equal Rights Amendment.
And by the way,
them with a huge portion of activating our voting machines that count our votes.
And it means that if when those systems go down, as we know, at least I remember all too well from out here on Super Tuesday, March 3rd, when those systems go down or they don't work or they slow down, people can't vote. And votes are suppressed. And now we're using electronic poll books without paper backups, in case they fail, all over the country.
And even if you had those paper backups, you still can't, if they go down, you still can't use them to activate the voting machines. So then you also need to either know how to do it manually, which I've seen instances where supposedly the poll workers should have known how to do it manually but didn't. So they may very well not be trained to do it manually. There's a lot going on. Or they'll forget. And it takes a lot longer to do it manually, I guess.
Yep.
And then on top, so you really need backup hand-marked paper ballots, too, for the these ballot marking machines. So, I mean, we do have several different vulnerabilities going on here,
mm-hmm.
and one is sort of the e-poll book BMD combination, and frankly, either one of them alone is a problem. The e-poll books or the BMDs by themselves is a problem. Put them together, that's a problem. And then I am very worried about this remote access and modems, because, I mean, there's nothing more direct than being able to remote into the central tabulator, whether it's with remote access software or hacking in via the internet. Yeah, you just go in there and you just change the county totals, and you know, I guess the problem that we have. So I have long advocated, as you know, and you too, for hand-marked paper ballots. States like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Florida have them. So you know, you at first blush you might think, okay, well we're good in those battleground states, but guess again, because they have laws that don't let you really look at them meaningfully, even in a recount.
That's right.
So Florida's manual recount law is really not a manual recount. It's primarily, you rescan the ballot, so it's an electronic recount.
Yep.
If you have hacked scanners, or a hacked tabulator, you get the same result. The only thing you look at would be by hand is the undervotes and the overvotes, and even then, you only get to do that if they're within 0.25% of each other.
All right.
So, otherwise, it's completely, I think, just a rescan,
yep.
I believe.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's one of the things that happened in Wisconsin. They left it up to the jurisdiction. Oh, you can count them by hand. This is in 2016 when the Green Party asked for a recount. You can count them by hand or you can count them by machine. It's up to you. And, of course, the largest jurisdictions in Wisconsin, in a state where, you know, Trump won supposedly by, I think it was about 20,000 votes, the largest jurisdictions all just ran them through the machines again, did not bother to count them, even though they had hand-counted paper ballots, which led me to my perhaps most famous refrain after elections, count the goddamn ballots. It is not that hard. Count them by human beings. All right, Jenny, I got to take a quick break here, and we will see if we have time to get to some calls. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Speaking to the great Jenny Cohn. You may know her from the Twitters. She is Jenny Cohn 1 there on the Twitters, and you did offer some tips to mitigate threats to our votes and registrations before November. I want to try to get to some of those, too. So a lot more straight ahead on the broadcast. Jenny, stay put. We'll be back with you in a second. I'm Brad. This is your broadcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to keep up the resistance, now more than ever. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Scary. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, speaking with Jenny Cohn, attorney and election integrity advocate. And Twitter hero, as far as I'm concerned, getting out the word about concerns, whether it's the modems in voting systems around the country or the lack of human beings actually bothering to count ballots, the results afterwards, leaving it to computers. What could possibly go wrong? I'm going to link to her article at Medium just a couple of weeks ago, tips to mitigate threats to our votes and voter registrations before November, because I want to try to get to at least a call or two here. Jenny, is that all right with you?
Of course, yeah.
All right, let me go to first to Andrew in L.A. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the broadcast. You got a question for Jenny Cohn?
Yeah, I sure do. By the way, I'm out in the desert area, Inland Empire now, sweating it out here. But anyway, I just heard the beginning of the interview. So I heard that the voting machines sounds like they're all in doubt. They could all be connected to the internet, which makes mm-hmm. them all hackable. And not even nobody knows. Not even all these people we're hearing on the news. The states don't know. The officials, and only Brad, and been telling us about this. And your author and the manufacturers and maybe a small number of people. Is that true? And then, so does that mean all voting machines are in question right now and we must either count all the votes by hand, or if we can't do that, we just still must rely on the popular whatever, what we're hearing out there mm-hmm. for, those who are flipping the switches to put it the way the people want it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Thank you, Andrew. Let me ask Jenny her response to that question. Thanks for the call, Andrew.
Yeah, so it's not all of the voting machines that are connecting to the internet. It is, though, in several battleground states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Florida. It's also some counties in those states. Some counties also in Texas, Tennessee, Minnesota, and a few others mm-hmm. that have these modems that are connecting the voting machines to the internet. So there is that. And then the modems also connect the county the aggregation systems that receive the precinct totals and aggregate them together. Those connect to the internet to receive the modem transmission.
It should also be
bad. No, there's more to this, though.
Yeah.
I mean, voting, even without that, even without these modems, and even without internet connectivity, certainly insiders have always been able to hack voting machines.
Yep.
Especially if they have access to that county central tabulator. But what this does is it opens up the attack surface more than it already was, and in particular, it makes it easier for foreign nations like Russia or Iran or China to gain access as well.
But
They can also gain access without these modems. It just makes it easier. It makes it a lot easier. It kind of makes it suspiciously easier. It's like rolling out the red carpet, and it's just unnecessary.
And it doesn't take a nation state. It can take anybody. You know, it was a guy, a 17-year-old kid on Twitter, who was able to put out tweets and raise a couple of $100,000 in the name of Barack Obama, Bill Gates, all of these people just a few weeks ago.
True, and that is an important point, but I do want to say I think Russia is a real threat, that sometimes mm-hmm. I think some of us in the election integrity community are so eager to point out it doesn't have to be Russia. This has always been a problem. The potential compromise of our elections has always been a problem, and that is true. But it's coming out more and more. There's a book called Rigged by David mm-hmm. Shimer that was published fairly recently, in which it says that in August 2016, the Obama administration the intelligence community had confirmed that Russia actually was in a position to change vote tallies in some mm-hmm. places. And the Obama administration was freaking out. And this is according to four senior former members of the Obama administration. And, you know, we have a lack of transparency going. We weren't told that. I think Russia is a real threat. And what's scary about it is even if you had Republicans, say, who... You know, even let's just say that there were domestic actors who are happy enough to rig elections, but are maybe not happy with Trump for putting babies in cages, and that was kind of a final straw for them. If we've now invited Russia to the party, it makes it worse. It was bad enough as it was.
Let me say this only because we're short on time, Jenny. I don't disagree with you. My concern is that It actually does not take a nation state. It could, anyone could do it. And my other concern is that even if it is not done, the fact that we have lost the transparency to oversee the results, to know, you know, for example, by counting hand-marked paper ballots, that leaves the door open if Joe Biden wins. There's nothing that stops Donald Trump or anybody else from saying it was stolen by a hacker, by China, by Iran, by Russia. And that's why we need oversight, public right. oversight. That's where we, the people, come in. Do we have time for, somebody wanted to know, was that Gina in L.A.? Do we have time? Okay, yeah, let me see if I can get to her. Gina, very quickly, welcome to the broadcast in Los Angeles. What's up, Gina?
Yes, I was talking to Desi, and I was asking her in regards to my mail-in ballot that I requested for the first time this year for my husband and I, that when I called the Registrar of Voters in San Bernardino County, because I can track it online, and where it really didn't give me a status update on it, and obviously they couldn't update it because it was prior to October 5th when they're going to be ready to be mailed out. I was wondering, how can I track my ballot? How can I track my vote? Everything is trackable these days. You can track your package.
Yeah, Gina, I'm going to cut you off because I'm short on time, but there is a ballot tracker that you should be able to sign up for at the Secretary of State's office in California. Not all states have that. California does. You put in your name, your phone number, your email, if that's how you prefer to be contacted, or by text, and they will get, theoretically, they will get in touch with you. They can't tell you how your vote was counted, but they can tell you that your ballot is on the way or it has been counted in one way or another. I hope that helps, Gina, and I'm sorry to be short here, but I got to get to I got to get out, unfortunately. Let me take one more very quick from a guy who's really good at fast questions, Mo in Long Beach. Go ahead, give us your thought for Jenny Cohn, Mo.
I ain't got no questions. I'm going to tell you right now, Trump's on the way out. He is gone. Don't worry about it. Talk to you later.
Well, that was short, and that was very comforting to me anyway. But that's going to be ugly no matter what the official result is. And actually, you know, you ask what my biggest concern is. I mean, the overarching concern that I think we both share is that there won't be any transparency about the result, and therefore we won't ever really know.
I strongly suggest you follow Jenny Cohn on the Twitters. You will find her at JennyCohn1. She's doing really important work there. You can also follow her at protectourvotes.com. And Jenny, I will link to your video and to your article at Medium with tips on how to mitigate the threats to our votes. Never enough time. But Jenny, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. All right, we got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator today, Federico Garcia, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. That's it. Until we meet again tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.